Each person has a musical song in their bodies. This is the hum from inside of you that can give you peace when you are really down. My grandmother had a hum, never a song. She would hum sitting in a rocking chair, and I would listen. That was the sound of her soul. That quote is from Tina Turner. Do you remember her story? Her amazing talent as a singer was discovered by Ike Turner, an established black songwriter and producer. In the 1970s, they were married and performed together as Ike and Tina Turner. But Ike soon became jealous of Tina's celebrity and turned abusive in their relationship. What's Love Got to Do with It? Well, that was the title of her most famous song and of the movie that tells the story of her struggle to break free from that relationship, her discovery of a resilience she never imagined was possible. And it was classic R&B. What's love got to do with it, got to do with it? Ooh. What's love but a secondhand emotion? Who needs a heart when a heart can be broken? In that time of trouble, Tina Turner discovered Buddhism and a chanting practice that has sustained her for decades. Nam-myoho Renge Kyo, Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. You see, she was raised a Baptist and she recited the Lord's Prayer as a regular practice before she discovered Buddhism. It didn't matter that I changed from being a Baptist to being a Buddhist, she said, because I learned later that they're all the same. They just use different words. Prayer is prayer. It doesn't matter what holy words you chant. What matters is that you do it with all of your involvement, with all of your heart. Nam-myoho Renge Kyo. That practice allowed her to move beyond guilt, she says, and to love herself. She was able to sustain a kind of radical love that empowered her to break free of the abuse and create a life that had love at the center. Love, Tina Turner came to know, love has everything to do with resilience and the living of a life that matters. Love has everything to do with it. Now, Tina Turner is not held up as a role model in many pulpits. I'll grant you that. Her life was tough. It was grainy, hard in many, many ways. Just like so many of our lives. I think the reason that resilience is such a compelling subject for us is that most of our lives have some hard places, some loss, some disappointment, some places where we struggle. All of us, or almost all, know places and times when we have been pressed down, sometimes pressed down again and again. Resilience is a survival skill that allows us to come back, to get back up, to keep on keeping on. Life just does not unfold as an unbroken path to success, an unbroken path to comfort, an unbroken path to satisfaction. There is always loss. Even the most privileged and protected of us discover that we have to sustain life and love despite loss. The less protected we are, the harder that life can be. The Garden of Eden story presents the hardness of life, the need to wrest sustenance from rocky soil and endure pain. That story presents the hardness of life as punishment for our own human hubris and our disobedience. Our liberal religious theology just does not buy into that responsibility, our own responsibility for the harshness of life. But I have to tell you, I can understand the biblical writers building that into the story. There had to be some reason for so much pain and so much grief and so much loss in life, surely a loving God could have done better by us. No? Theologian Frederick Buechner argues that the role of the preacher is not to promise an easy salvation. Buechner was a Christian, to be sure, but a Christian with more questions of that tradition than most. The role of the preacher, he argued, is simply to tell the truth, including the truth about the hardness of life. But that hardness of life is not the only truth, and so the preacher has to make that hardness of life not the final word. Not the final word. Helen Keller expressed the same thought. Although the world is full of suffering, it is also full of the overcoming of suffering. Also full of overcoming. So what's love got to do with it? We cannot allow the hardness and the cruelty and the greed to be the last word. It is that song of the soul that Tina Turner described, that hum from inside of you that can give you peace when you are really down. There is more to life than cruelty and greed. There is the overcoming of cruelty and greed. Tina Turner talked about her grandmother and listening to her grandmother's song. Our past, our ancestors, can provide one source of real resistance. The resilience and spirit that carried our people to this day is what will carry us to our next great moment. Those are the words of Jefferson Keel of the National Congress of American Indians. Now, you know that I draw a lot from history, from my own personal history and from our collective history. And there is right now a reclaiming and a telling of the history of particular peoples, of their struggles and their overcoming, that is actually part of the cutting edge in many ways, the cutting edge of our current work on oppression, reclaiming those stories. There's a new indigenous people's history and a queer history of the U.S. that now have a place beside Howard Zinn's people's history on my bookshelf at home. A disability history, an African-American history, a Latinx history. And I want to take just a moment for some denominational pride here, because all of those histories are published by our own Unitarian Universalist Beacon Press. Our faith is actually a part of the work of claiming our connection to the resiliences which are our collective heritage. Senator Tammy Baldwin writes, "All of us who are openly gay are living and writing the history of our movement. We are no more and no less heroic than the suffragists and the abolitionists of the 19th century and the labor organizers, freedom riders, Stonewall demonstrators, and environmentalists of the 20th century. We are ordinary people living our lives and trying, as civil rights activist Dorothy Cotton said, to fix what ain't right in the world." Resilience is part of our heritage. And though we need to be very careful not to simply appropriate the stories from other peoples and other cultures, we need to guard against that. Indeed, we do. But those stories can be real sources of inspiration if we treat them appropriately. Valerie Kaur is a civil rights activist and a Sikh, or a Sikh, some people say, an American follower of that monotheistic faith that originated in the Punjab of India. Following September 11th, Sikhs were profiled and attacked just as were Muslims, and they still are being. Some of the asylum seekers that we helped transition out of Sheridan Prison in the fall were of that faith. They were Sikhs. Sikhism is a universalist faith, and it has much to say about both love and resilience. I was inspired by a TED Talk by Valerie Kaur, one that was forwarded to me by a congregant who happens to be in the pews this morning, Linda Fitzgerald, forwarded to me a few weeks ago by Linda. "You are brave," her mother told her, as she, and I'm quoting now, "poured my grandfather's prayer into my ear during the birth of my son. The hot winds cannot touch you. You are brave." My mother already knew, Valerie says, what I was just beginning to name, that love is more than a rush of feeling that happens to us if we're lucky. Love is sweet labor, fierce, bloody, imperfect, life-giving, a choice we make over and over again. Love is a choice we make again and again. Joy is the gift of love, she says. Grief is the price of love. Anger is the force that protects love. Wow. Or more appropriately, amen. Valerie Carr's story. I was a little girl growing up in California, where my family has lived and farmed for a century. When I was told that I would go to hell because I was not Christian, called a black dog because I was not white, I ran to my grandfather's arms. Papa G dried my tears, gave me words of Guru Nanak, the founder of the Sikh faith. "I see no stranger," said Nanak. "I see no enemy." My grandfather taught me that I could choose. I could choose to see all the faces I meet and wonder about them. And if I wonder about them, then I will listen to their stories even when it is hard. I will refuse to hate them even when they hate me. I will even vow to protect them when they are in harm's way. That's what it means to Valerie to be a Sikh. It is called walking the path of the warrior saint. The first Sikh woman warrior rallied deserters from a great battle of empire. Mai Bago was her name. "You will not abandon the fight," she told the deserters. "You will return to the fire, and I will lead you." So she mounted a horse, donned a turban, and became the one she was waiting for. My grandfather saw me as a warrior even then, even when I was a little girl with two long braids, she says. Valerie speaks of that warrior path as the choice for revolutionary love. Revolutionary love, she says, asks the question, who have we not yet tried to love? Who have we not yet tried to love? She draws from her heritage and her family and her faith the resilience to see those around her not as threats and not simply as categories, though the categories of identity are important, often holding the wounds we need most to heal. Revolutionary love requires us to push through the fire with a warrior's heart and saint's eyes so that one day, I'm quoting her again, "one day you will see my son as your own and protect him when I am not there. You will tend to the wound in the ones who want to hurt him. You will teach him to love himself because you love yourselves. You will whisper in his ear, as I whisper in yours, you are brave. You are brave." Unitarian Universalists became known as the love people. When we began wearing those yellow shirts, I bet some of you still have them in your closet at home. I'm not going to ask for hands on that one. Those shirts that announced that we were on the side of love. But love has to do with more than simply voicing commitment to a particular cause of justice. This week, I asked the members of our Board of Trustees what resilience looked like for them and where they found resilience in their own lives. In responding, they spoke of family and faith. Some spoke of this church and even service on the board as a source of resilience for them. And a surprising number of them spoke of book groups that they had been part of for years, for decades even, of covenant and friendship groups that have met regularly, groups that have been part of their lives over the span of time. They spoke of those individuals, those groups, members of this church who, over the years, have seen them for who they are, with their strengths and with their weaknesses. Those individuals and groups who, through faithful relationship, have communicated again and again and again, you are lovable and you are loved as you already are and as you are becoming. The groups and the individuals who whisper in our ears that the song of our souls, the tune of our lives' hum, is a worthy and beautiful melody that is wanted and a melody that is welcome. They were describing the impact of love, faithful over time, that can allow us to find resilience in our spirits, a resilience that can be shared. Reverend Barbara Peskin, in a piece entitled Reunion, writes, "One of the old ones stood up into the morning light and spoke to those who had come back to the river. 'Now we have come again to this place. My life apart from you is not as strong. Yes, I have danced and I have told the stories at my own fire, and I have sung well to all eight directions. But when I am with you, my friends, I know better who it is in me that sings.'" Who it is in me that sings. Can we see each other and know ourselves seen as recipients of love? Yes, that we need that. But also as sources of love that can help and can heal. The songs of our souls call us to choose love rather than hate as the source of our resilience. And love does not promise ease. Love promises the strength to deal with the hardness that comes with living and the hardness that we can correct. Call it resilience, call it faith, call it dogged insistence that there is a better way. Call it the naive willingness to work for a world in which our plenty is not purchased with the want of so many. Call it the religious impulse, if you will, that sees other faces and wonders, but does not fear. That vision that sees tragedy with every young black man gunned down by police, not justified self-defense. That vision that sees terrified children taken from their parents on the border, not danger we should wall ourselves away from. Love is a choice, and love is a discipline. This is seeing with love's eyes and finding that love has everything to do with it. This is the love that runs between us, sustaining force of restoration, the love that nourishes and feeds us, binds us each to our collective core. Love will repair us in the shadow of the trespass. Love will repair us in the warmth of one another, in the light of what restored we will become. Amen. Will you pray with me now? Spirit of life and of love, we do not ask you, whatever you may be, we do not ask you to fix the world, but the world needs fixing. We do not ask you to promise success, We do not ask you to make it easy to end injustice or to provide blueprints for the beloved community. We know that ours are the only hands on earth and that ours are the hearts that need to be healed. We ask only that the movement of our lives point toward hope and that our eyes be open to see the beauty in the faces around us, all of the faces around us. We ask only that our ears be open to hear the songs of the souls that journey with us and to hear our own song sustaining us, giving us the resilience and the courage to answer your call, to answer the call of love. Amen.